because I struggled a lot mentally too with the pressure of cycling. I always thought I was a winner. I always thought, you know, I wanted to win. We all want to win. And then I won, and I realized that, like, maybe I'm not a winner. But that was after my mom telling me, she's like, "You're not competitive." And I was like, "Wait, Mom, no. Like, I'm competitive. I bike." And she's like, "No, you're not." And that's when I started finding out, like, okay, I think more of my purpose is being a helper. Because we all have to have that balance in this world, is having helpers, having the ones that are driven. And so I started realizing, yeah, maybe I'm the workhorse.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Stable Cyclist Podcast. My name is JP, and for the second week in a row, we've got a bonus episode for you. And I want to start things off by thanking all of you who are listening. This is the 9th episode of the Stable Cyclist Podcast, and I cannot believe how fast this podcast has grown. And it is all because of people like you who are sharing it with others to listen to as well. We've got people literally all over the world listening to this podcast, from places like Australia and Mozambique and the country that I spent part of 3 summers teaching English in, Poland. That's a story for another day. The podcast is growing because you listeners are doing an amazing job of sharing it, and let's keep that rolling. This week, do me a favor and take a screenshot of the podcast as you listen to it, and go ahead and tag at the Stable Cyclist, as well as this week's guest, Charlotte Backus Turner. You can find her on socials at Charlotte Backus, and keep sharing that pod around. The work you're doing on your end to share the podcast around with friends and others allows us to bring in guests like Charlotte this week, and also next week's guest, who I will tease only as the person who I refer to in the Mataje film as one of the goats of U.S. mountain bike racing. This episode is brought to you by Flow Formulas. If you are training for a race or just training in general, you want to feel your best on the bike. And if that's the case, Flow Formulas Endurance Mix and Recovery Mix are for you. I am a really salty sweater, and so anytime I go into the Flow Formula website, I make sure I throw a bag of the high sodium mix into my cart. It has been a game changer for me, and if you got some goodies that you're throwing into your cart, you can use the code JohnPeter15 at checkout to get a discount on those goodies. All right, enough of that. It is time to bring Charlotte Backus Turner into the studio. Well, Charlotte Backus Turner, welcome to the Stable Cyclist Podcast. It is late March right now when people are going to hear this. And what are you up to these days? Are you prepping for races? Are you getting ready for some bikepacking adventures? Or what is next on your radar right now?
Well, currently it's like snowing a ton here in Park City. So plans of riding outside, I'm kind of over skiing. I ski a lot in the winter. So I was in California last week doing kind of a big kind of training block / coaching with other gravelists. So right now it's kind of just training and preparing for my first race, which is in April. And it's odd to say, but it's a mountain bike race, and I thought I would never say that because I come from a UCI road background, and here I am starting my season with a mountain bike race, which I'm stoked about. Things have changed a lot over the years, and I'm excited to be getting into more ultra, more mountain biking. So yeah, just right now training inside on my Watt bike.
Okay.
Swifting.
Right on. Well, Charlotte, you have a real diverse background as far as different sports within the bike world, and also different backgrounds that you come from with nutrition and psychology and a lot of different pieces. But I want to start with one of the more honest quotes I have heard on a podcast in a long time. And you were on the Consummate Athlete podcast early March, I think March 5th episode. People should go listen to it for some really good bikepacking stories and a lot of other good stuff. But you made a quote in that episode where you said, "I went to Fort Lewis College for road bike racing." And I thought that was just fantastic that you would be that honest. Kids ask me what I went to college for, and I said I went to college to be a runner, even though I knew I wasn't going to become one. I just loved doing it. I looked at my counselor and I said, "What ACT score do I need to get so I can run in my first year at a Division II school?" And that's what I aimed for. And so whenever I hear honesty like that, my ears perk up. And tell me about that decision making. Tell me about going to a school that is, it truly is known as a school you go to ride bikes and to race bikes and learn how to do it at a really high level. Tell me what got you there. And then we're, I think everything from there kind of unfolds more neatly in your story.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great saying that. I went on a full ride pretty much, for cycling. I was born and raised in Colorado, the Front Range. So I had been developing on junior teams and probably racing like every weekend. And then like hanging out with the guys groups every week, driving an hour, probably five times a week to Denver to train. And so I knew I wanted to stay in state. I love Colorado. So it was kind of like, okay, let's look around schools, you know, but I can't really remember too much. Believe it or not, I was actually coming off an eating disorder. Senior year of high school, it was a little better, but I was in the hospital for about a year in and out for anorexia. And at the time I was cycling, but cycling became my way of escape, way of kind of healing myself. And that's what the racing did, hanging out with teammates, racing. And so I was like, I want to go to college for cycling because that was my ultimate goal. But I wanted to also learn. I'm a nerd. I like learning things. And so I was like, well, why don't I go in for psychology? Because the thing that helped me the most with healing was understanding my brain, understanding the nutrition. And like for some reason that all went in intertwined with cycling, with performance. And so, yeah, went and visited Fort Lewis, kind of got actually called by them, also CMU, Colorado Mesa, and picked Fort Lewis because it was in the mountains. I'm a mountain girl. And so went there and started off the season, and I don't regret any second of it. The whole team there is incredible, and sadly it's still considered a club sport where they fund the football team more than the cycling team. But we all managed, you know, we didn't complain. We just rode our bikes, had a great time, and just enjoyed college, being full-time students, having full-time jobs, being full-time athletes. And on the outside of that too, I was developing as an athlete on the UCI level. So collegiate racing was just an enhancement to getting more experience of a racing and teammates. So it was just such a overall like incredible experience on the fact that I was also learning about exercise science, human anatomy, chemistry, and psychology, which was just really perfect. The supportive system there continues to be incredible.
Yeah. So you're at Fort Lewis, and you're studying psychology, and you're racing your bike a whole lot, and you're moving your way up even into the pro ranks with the UCI system. And at what point are you starting to think, like, maybe I want to be a coach in all of this too and not just be a bike racer?
Yeah, that's a good question. The coaches at Fort Lewis always reminded us, you know, cycling can be a career and everything, but we also have to have other outlets to do, you know, on recovery days, to do things passionately and always not make cycling the end-all be-all. Because I found out if you do that, you can kind of get into this vicious cycle of just kind of living this mundane life where you're still enjoying the cycling, but then maybe you don't because you're just, it becomes like a job.
Yeah.
And so they always just really like enforce that, you know, let's do other things. And I think that's why being in college at a cycling college and doing all the other activities, like I was involved with many other programs. I was a spin instructor. I did film and video. I did so much that it allowed me to expand my mind, and I love the psychology, and that's why I went into there, because like I said, it healed me. Just understanding how our brains work, which is crazy. Literally, we're all crazy, and it's great to understand why we think, because I always wondered why. I always struggled with mental health as a kid.
Yeah.
From anger management all the way to suicide, to eating disorders, to depression. So being able to understand the mind and learn about it even more and do research studies and all of this was really helpful. And then, you know, riding, well, always being in sports. I swam for 10 years, excelled at that, got at the top, I quit. Played the violin for, I don't know, 12 years, 15 years at the top symphony, then I quit. So I was always like, I would always go to the top, but I had a lot of experience of doing different activities. Then I did lacrosse for 5 years and then started doing cycling. And that's when my parents were like, you got to choose, you can't do it all. And so I picked cycling, and that was 14. So from 14 all the way to college, I had so much experience with training, racing, eating, all this stuff. And so being a coach kind of just came naturally. I actually, going into college, I know we always like going to college and you usually don't do what you're going to think you're going to do, but coaching was never even in my mind. Like, it was just, oh, psychology, yeah, maybe I'll be a psychologist, but bikes, I'll bike. But coaching never came into mind until around my senior year. Okay. I just noticed when I rode with groups, when I rode with friends, I just was a nerd. I loved absorbing all information about power, watts, heart rate, all this data, but also just like the flow of how to train. Because I struggled a lot mentally too with the pressure of cycling. I always thought I was a winner. I always thought, you know, I wanted to win. We all want to win. And then I won and I realized that like, maybe I'm not a winner. That was after my mom telling me, she's like, you're not competitive. And I was like, wait, Mom, no, like I'm competitive. I bike. And she's like, no, you're not. And that's when I started finding out like, okay, I think more of my purpose is being a helper. Cause we all have to have that balance in this world, is having helpers, having the ones that are driven. And so I started realizing, maybe I'm the workhorse. And so going into more UCI racing, I became more of the workhorse, where I was like, I will sprint my heart out for you and I'm satisfied, more than trying to have the pressure of winning and doing well and succeeding. I would crack under that. And I think there's a few of us that do that too. And at first I was like, that's just not a cyclist. That doesn't make me a cyclist, but it does. It's a whole team aspect. Everyone has their different fortes in cycling. And so that's when I was like, you know, maybe I want to become a coach. Cause I, with all my experiences with the eating disorder, with the training, all of this stuff, I knew there was some kind of purpose to me helping others, and not just in training and getting to the high level, but in just training or just having a living, you know, like they have most of my athletes have full-time jobs and kids, and some of them are like 75 years old and they're just trying to be young. I want it to be a very inclusive thing, because it is a very inclusive sport. It's for anybody. And I feel like when I was at the pro level, granted this is very normal, that it kind of excludes that. That's why I started loving the ultra and the gravel scene, because it's about getting Joe Schmo or whoever on the bike to just try 100 miles and see if they can make it through. It's not about, oh, time or this or who wins. It's about, well, can you do this? I think you can. I mean, some people are on the craziest bikes that I would be like, I don't know how you ride that, or single speeds, you know, or whatever bike they can find. So it just puts it into perspective. So in all, yeah, that's when I was like, you know, I want to coach. I want to help either developing athletes or younger athletes, especially women, strive away from eating disorders, because it's very, very prevalent. I've already worked with multiple athletes that have had eating disorders, but also bringing in the psychological aspect of it. And that's when I was like, well, maybe I should start studying nutrition. So I started studying nutrition and really diving into that too, because that had been with me for a long, long time.
So you're racing and you're doing the UCI deal and you're studying psychology, and eventually you start coaching, and then you're also doing the nutrition thing. What is the arc of all of that time-wise? Obviously, we're not talking 6 weeks here or even a year. How long did that take you, or I guess when did that evolution of you as a coach start?
I would honestly say it started when I was 14, when I started training with the Carmichael training systems, really understanding what training does. I actually grew up on a trainer. I lived out in the country, and the only way for me to ride was with my dad. But over work work week, he couldn't ride with me, so I would hook up my bike to this compy trainer, write all my own workouts on a little sticky note, and like stare at a blank wall, no music, nothing, and just train every day of the week. So I think it started there because I started gaining the knowledge of like, okay, doing the FTP tests, that's helpful. Doing these certain power tests, doing these certain zone things, very helpful. And then as I developed and got older, I started understanding like, oh, let's get into the science actually. And then nutrition went along with that too. So my senior seminar project or capstone project, I actually, this was a while ago, so it was kind of before all the protein powders really like boomed out, but I made a protein powder that was mixed with like beets and turmeric because of now the science shows it, but then it was kind of, there wasn't much, and I think I called it like beet something. It was like beet elite or something, and it, beet elite came up with that, but it was like really funny how like, you know, using all that knowledge and then bringing it to college, it's just, yeah, so it's taken years and years and years.
Yeah, you mentioned that you had an eating disorder, and you take a very unique approach with your athletes today and working with them in all these pieces kind of at once. Is your own personal experiences the thing that's driving all of that?
A lot of it's my experience. The way I think about things is I've very much think about what I'm thinking about. So when it comes to me seeing and understanding eating disorders, it could be someone who just comes to me and I already know they have one. I'm a very empathic person. I can really feel people's emotions. And so it's hard for people to hide from me. But I also really understand how to kind of be on their level, because I never want to talk down on anybody. We're all here on the same level, and I think that also comes from experience where I was talked down to because I was young, and it was really hard for me. And so I really understand. I can spot it, but I'm always open to science. I'm always keeping my mind open to, but to be honest, there's not like any eating disorder specific like sports nutrition programs. There's not much out there. And I've taken like 3 or 4 different sports nutrition certified classes, and none of them, like, they talked a little bit about the triad or the other, the SAT or whatever. And, you know, it wasn't like in depth of like, okay, what do you do? It was only like, okay, well, here's the signs. And I was like, well, maybe you're missing a few signs too, because cycling, especially the road cycling part, I have to say it's really challenging. And that's kind of a little reason why I stepped away a bit more, was just the weight issue. Because it is, big component is power to weight. And yes, you need to be lean being at a sport level, but there's a threshold, and it was how less you can eat, how skinny you can be. Yeah, it was really challenging. And it was hard to navigate. And I would say my senior year of college, I kind of relapsed. I was way underweight, but I was fast, only for so long. Kind of bit me in the butt, but yeah, it's hard. There's not many like classes. And I think ultimately, you know, I'm still young. I'm 26. I would love to in the future create a program for athletes, because I think it's becoming more prevalent too with the society we live in, with all these diet fads, all this stuff that's surrounding us that's non-athletic based, that's kind of leeching into the athletic world. I think it's definitely, there needs to be a class for it or more knowledge on it.
You know, I want to talk directly to why there is such an issue in cycling. Is it straight down to watts per kilo being this, you know, sexy metric we all want to feel the best about, or is it that we look at the tour or the pros and they are like skeletal skinny, or what is the reason that's such an issue? Because I've struggled with it myself, of trying to get way too skinny, and it being very detrimental to my physical health and mental health eventually.
Yeah, definitely power to weight. Like, the skinnier you are, the easier it is for you to go up mountains, yeah. But then you also see the pros doing it. I think it's a mix of things, because you see them doing it, and so you're like, well, I gotta look like them because they're doing great. And to be honest, when you get skinnier and you lose weight and you hold your power for the first bit, you get stronger. And you're like, this is great. So it fuels it. And so you just, oh, okay, then I won't eat as much. I think the biggest problem in the pros, this is where they stand out from others, is this is where I was kind of an amateur, is I was like, okay, lose the weight, stay skinny for the season, be strong, do well. Came the off season, what the pros do is they gain weight. They do strength training. They do this, they do that. Whereas I was like, well, I don't want to gain weight. I was so strong. I got to stay here. And so I actually lost more weight. So it started my next season in a deficit. So that is the biggest advice for any amateur out there or becoming a pro, is gain the weight back in the off season and do strength. Pilates, strength. You don't have to be a sumo wrestler. You're not going to gain a lot back. And I think there's a lot of fear for me because I was still kind of in the older cycling method of like, well, if you do strength, you'll gain too much weight. Whereas now we're seeing a ton of like the importance of strength. Right now I'm like totally stoked on Pilates because that really stems our inner strength and our muscle fibers, but it allows you to also kind of gain some weight back. You have to restore your weight back. So then you can drop back. So it's a very cyclical thing. That's, I think, the biggest mistake I ever made. And I think it's a mistake that a lot of people make. You can lose the weight, but also you have to gain it back and give yourself a break.
For sure. So you're today working with athletes, and how are you incorporating as a coach? Like, what does it look like to incorporate these ideas of psychology? Obviously training, you're going to be training them because that's what everybody thinks of with a coach, but how are you incorporating the nutrition and the psychology into what you're doing with the athletes you work with on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, it really depends on the level. And who, like, and I know that's like what everyone says. It depends on who you are and your goals. But it kind of really does. It's on an individual basis, but I always make sure to, I'm always there 100% of the time. They always know they can text me or call me and I respond right away as best as I can. Because I don't want to close the book of like, oh, I only have certain hours. And I know it would be different if I have 100 athletes. But I cap myself at a certain amount of athletes because I want to really personalize it for them, because I want to listen. I want to be a coach that listens and is, and I've been told that you're not supposed to have friend relationships with athletes and stuff. But I said, you know, I'm a new generation. I beg to differ. I think having a good relationship with your athletes is key to their success, because then they know the coach is on your side. And so during our talks, you know, depending on level, I also offer specific nutrition on the side, because sometimes people like to break it up. They don't like to have everything in one because it's so much, it's so overwhelming. But for people that have the whole package, you know, we'll talk each week. One week will be about training. The next will be about nutrition. A lot of what I do is I'm not a dietitian, and I didn't become a dietitian for a reason, because I don't like to give meal plans out. I like to suggest and really talk about the science. And mainly most of my nutrition is performance-based. I actually gave a talk a few weeks ago in LA to a bunch of junior mountain bike kids, and all about, you know, how many grams an hour you need, all this. And they were stoked, like, and they took it and they're like second best team now. And it's been so great to see them so excited about that. But at first they're very nervous. They don't know what I'm really talking about. They're not sure, but they warmed up. And so my biggest thing is I always want to make sure people warm up to me. And that's where the psychology plays a role. I'm not a therapist, but I would say a lot of conversations bring a lot of things up. I won't ever diagnose anything or try to cure anybody of like any mental disorder. It's out of my scope, but I'm there as a coach. And this is like, I'm also thinking of my future of like, okay, well, maybe I become a life coach too, and making a sports life coach, to where, because if I'm talking to one of my athletes and they're having a problem at home with either time constraints or kids or another family member being sick, it's going to show up in the training. It's going to show up in the nutrition. Their nutrition is going to be all over the place. And so a lot of our conversations, they bring out a lot of emotions. And so being there as a coach to support them and not just be there to give workouts that make their eyeballs pop out of their head, which is part of the reason. But it's a show that I'm there to support as a friend, as a coach, as a companion, that I'm not just there that they're paying for me. I don't like to do coaching for money. I like to do it to help other people. And that's my main goal.
Yeah. And ultimately you're trying to, part of the reason we get into like the eating disorder territories, we think about this activity we do as the end all, like we won't want per kilo or whatever. And we get away from that when we can start to understand how it helps us be well-balanced people. And that's where you have to bring in the mental health. You have to bring in the nutrition and then the workout. Yeah. You do need your eyeballs to pop out at some point each week, but that's not the thing. And so much of what you're describing is trying to help people find that balance ultimately.
Yeah. I talk about it. It's a code. I like to say we all have our codes and there's multiple codings that we have to find and pull from. And it takes so many years of experience to crack our code. That's when we see so much relief. You don't see like people totally like, that's the one crazy thing is like people who win, they're like full of energy. They found their code and their code is in sync and they like cross the line and they could like do another lap or whatever. Whereas like, then you see like fifth place, they're like all out and they're like, oh, I'm so tired. I have nothing left in me. So it just, the psychology is so much a part of that code. Our mindset is so much part of that code.
For sure. When we're talking about athletes and the nutrition, we're going to talk about on bike nutrition and then we'll talk a little later about off bike nutrition. But when you're working with athletes, and my guess is this answer is different today than it was even 2 years ago, but what are the big mistakes that you see athletes making on the bike with their nutrition?
Oh boy. Yeah. This one's hydration, carbs. It's like the two biggest things that like, and this comes from experience too. How many times I've bonked out there and I'm like, why am I bonking? Cause it's just ignorance. And also just, it's really hard to eat and drink while you're riding, you know, if it's a super technical course, really hard. I totally get that. So I really try to find ways that we can get in hydration and nutrition. And with technology now, you can have things binging at you, but a lot of it's creating the habit. And so there's, I guess, three now. The other biggest thing is people like to try new things. I see this a lot in the gravel scene because you have the expos and you see all these new products and you're like, oh, I could try that tomorrow. And so they try all this new stuff and their stomachs just are whacked. Because we don't want to try anything new on race day or event day. Training is for trying. And so I always say, if you want to perform, fuel yourself. If you don't want to perform, okay, fine. Maybe take a little bit back. If you're not like in the mindset of, I want to perform and do well on this workout, it's not as pressing. And that it changes with ultra. I'm learning a lot this year with ultra nutrition because it's very different. But now we see like Keegan, he's a good friend of ours, and he's up to so many grams of carbohydrates where you said like 2 years ago, it was only like maxing out at maybe 100 grams per hour. So it takes years to build your stomach. And everyone is very different. It really stems down to our gut microbiome and how your body processes carbs. And if you have someone saying, well, don't do carbs when you're doing rides, don't listen to them. Always take it with a grain of salt. Okay, I always like to look at the zone levels. Endurance zone 2 for an hour, you don't necessarily need carbs. Your body's not pulling from carb sources. It's mainly fat and maybe some carb. You start going to tempo, little bit more carb, less fat. Threshold, more carb. VO2, sprints, all carb, no fat. And so always think of the performance aspect of what workout am I doing? What should I fuel myself with? I always like to say simple, the better. Sometimes ingredients like some of the bars or gels or whatever have so many ingredients in there that it's like, every ingredient is something for your body to process. If we can minimize the ingredients and make it simple, Your body is a lot easier to go through that. And then train as you would fuel. And I like to use my workouts that I have hard workouts for as I have gels. I just isotonic gels mainly. I just down those, and those are if I want to perform, I fuel my body.
For sure. So one thing that I know people will hear, because it was prevalent and is only becoming less prevalent in the last year or two, people will hear you say zone two maybe means no carb, and they're thinking, I can just go out with two bottles of water and I'll be fine. And you and I would both say, maybe you're going to be fine. However, your recovery is going to get behind before you even get off the bike. And so, can you talk about how one of the holes people put themselves in, and this is where I found myself in a hole, and I have a friend who got herself into Reds because of this. If you underfuel on the bike, can you talk about the long-term things that start to happen to our bodies if we underfuel during our rides and we can't get ourselves back out of that hole in recovery? Like, how does that kind of like cascade on itself?
Yeah, it's a true overtraining aspect, and you're right, like Reds, I did it too. I used to like fast before every ride,
Of
and
course you did, because we all did, right? It
yeah,
was the
right.
way.
And fasting is okay cyclically for women, and depending on the kind of ride you're doing. Like I understand if someone's waking up 6 a.m. they don't want to like slam a breakfast at like 4 a.m.
Yeah.
So you can start your ride fasted, but I say start fueling 30 minutes in. Like just start. And that hole, you're so right. Like you, if you've ever noticed, I always like tell people this, but after a ride, let's say you do that endurance ride and you do a 2 hour endurance ride, two bottles of water, no electrolytes. Oof, ouch. electrolytes are important too. But
Yep.
if you find yourself standing in front of the refrigerator, like I'm so hungry in the middle of the day or right after your ride, you did it wrong. And you think of this aspect of like, I like how you said you start digging a hole. Because what happens when we, and this is I think where people miss the ball, what really drives our strength and our energy is metabolic health. And
Yeah.
what happens when we take away nutrition and calories and energy from our body's like, oh shoot, I gotta conserve. So it's gonna start pulling from fat sources. But once you start doing a little more of the carb sources and there's nothing there, it's gonna be like, well, there's muscle. Muscle has some carbs. I'm gonna start pulling from muscle fibers. And so all of the work that you're doing, it's just going down the drain. And then that hole turns into you're getting less muscle, you're getting tired, and with all of this, if it's very consistent, you're doing this very often, then your body starts to say, okay, I'm really in this like low zone. Even if you fuel yourself during the day, it's already in this low reserves area. So it's going to back off on the metabolism. So it's going to lower the metabolism. You're going to burn less calories. And so it's going to slow digestion. It's going to just this backlash. And so we have to think if we fuel ourselves, it's always like a car. I know everyone uses this as an analogy, but like, let's say, okay, fine, I'm gonna be like 2024. It's an electric car. If you're like, because I have an electric car, so if you're like 20% and you're like, oh, I'll make it, I won't stop at this place and give it a little bit of energy, just like 20 seconds or 20 minutes, it's gonna go into turtle mode. Been there, done that with my car. Turtle mode sucks and it's hard to get out of it. You have to get towed. And so there's so much to say, fuel your performance. And a lot of people think of it as like, oh, calories, calories. I always like to say, change your mindset. Fuel the performance for metabolic energy, for revving your metabolism and creating that energy to be faster and stronger. And so if you change your mindset off the numbers to the science, the actual metabolism, then it just seems a little more simple.
Well, and there, for those of you out there that are listening, they're like, this sounds a little crazy, and it's 2024, so it shouldn't sound crazy with where the science is at. But I can remember the first time I fueled a ride correctly, and we'll talk about sodium here next, but I also had the right amount of sodium finally. And I got done with a 4-hour ride, and like actually played with my kids in the afternoon and didn't lay on a couch, and I felt totally normal because I'd finally fueled right. And then my sleep was good that night. And then the next day I felt normal. And like, as much as it's a hole that you can dig yourself in, it's also, you know, the mountain you can climb a whole lot faster with just getting fit. If you just take care of yourself and you do the things you need to, and kind of go against what we were counterintuitively told through the 90s, 2000s and 2010s even.
Yeah, very. And it's like that whole too, it just takes your body so much more to recover. So the next day you're just not feeling up for it. You're tired. And yeah, it just speaks words to how important it is to fuel, because it is amazing. And I always tell, just give it one workout. Just give me one workout where you're like second guessing it. And you're like, oh, should I? Just do it. Just do it and see how you feel. Just can be one workout and you'll understand like how incredible it is to have that energy.
For sure. So let's talk about sodium. I have down here JP's personal case study. There are a lot of people that I think for years have looked at companies that put out high sodium stuff and thought, why do we need that? And then you look at those same people like myself, and if they wear a black kit on race day, it looks like a white kit by the end of the time because they've sweat so much salt out. And I didn't put the two together until I started working with who I work with now, and that's Flow Formulas. And they had a high sodium mix that is so high sodium, it like blew my mind when you look at the numbers. But then I started to use it and I felt really awesome. And like now that's my like secret weapon if it's even remotely hot and I'm going to go out long, long time. Why is sodium such a huge thing? And why is it like this connector piece that mostly we've been missing until recently? Because like Gatorade would always talk about, oh, we have sodium in our stuff. And like it has minimal sodium compared to what these drink companies are putting out now.
Yeah, it's crazy. They're getting higher and higher because the science is showing there's electrolytes, you know, magnesium, potassium, those are important. But sodium really drives muscle contractions and it gets lost through our sweat. You might not be a big sweater, but you might lose a lot of sodium. You also lose it through your breath. So there's, and like, if you think of yourself riding, you're like breathing a lot. So you might be losing a ton too. And so it's really good to test it. And now with like, I saw Gatorade has patches you can put on. I don't know how accurate they are, but now there's like all these different testings. I did a camp with Alan Lim, big fan of Alan Lim, in Boulder a few years ago. And he did the OG, you know, patch, see how much. And I'm not really a sweater. And so I was like, well, I don't need that much. I ended up needing about 1,000 milligrams per hour.
Yeah.
Which is like, everyone's like, oh my gosh, it's like a daily value. But again, this is where I think the nutrition of the outside sedentary world comes in and kind of blends into the cycling, where it's like, oh no, don't, sodium's bad for you. Where it's, again, if we want to perform and we're performing, we have to fuel that performance, not just food, but nutritionally or with hydrationally too. So sodium is so important because it may cause even more cramps at night. People, I know a lot of people have like restless leg syndrome where they like are cramping in the middle of the night. And so that means they might've not done enough sodium during the ride. You could do sodium throughout the day, but during the ride is where it really, really matters. And it also helps with the recovery process. If you've looked at some of the recovery, and there's this glorious like 4-to-1 ratio, which is super important right after your ride. But there's also sodium in there because you have to replenish what you have lost, so your body can be like, okay, let's keep building and make tomorrow better.
Yeah. When people have asked me about it, I'm like, do you know on the Gatorade logo, how there's the lightning bolt? That's because the salt makes all the charges work in your muscles. But yeah, you're also right about the amount that we need. I think a single serving of Flow is like 800 milligrams. And people will ask me like, well, how much salt do you need? And I said enough that it would have killed my grandpa when he had his like heart disease late in life. You know, people can't eat salt at all at that point. And the amount that we need is so high, but you're also right that we're exercising and we're just sweating and breathing it out just as fast. So let's shift and talk quick about the mistakes that you see people making off the bike with their food, whether it's timing or whether it's what they're eating or what they where they're thinking they should cut corners and not. You're working with people on a regular basis on this kind of stuff. And like you said, you're not meal planning, you're not a dietitian, but what are some just common mistakes and maybe even ones that you made personally off the bike with your nutrition?
Yeah, usually it's me too. But it's the recovery after the ride. A lot of people think, oh, protein shake, perfect, 100% protein. But you actually want to replenish your carbs first. So it's the glorious, it could also be 3-to-1, but 4-to-1. So chocolate milk. And they always said, oh, you have like a 30-minute recovery window. It's not exactly 30 minutes on the dot. I always just say as soon as possible. You can even do it on your cool down on the bike, because as soon as you start that recovery process, the bigger window you open to recover. So the next day you're recovered. But a lot of people, it's hard when you have a full-time job or kids or whatever. It's like, okay, off bike, shower, on to the next thing. And so then they're ravenously hungry the rest of the day. Their body's like, oh, I'm so tired. I've recommended this to so many athletes who didn't do this, but just one recovery shake before your shower. Doesn't have to be like a million ounces, just 4 ounces, 8 ounces of four grams of carbs to 1 gram of protein and a little bit of sodium. And so you can make it like I've usually just made it like I throw a banana in there, a half scoop of protein powder, a little bit of sea salt, or you can buy like Scratch has some recovery ones, but make sure it's that, and you can do the math, 4 grams of carb, 1 gram of protein. And so what that allows is your body replenishes the carbs, replenishes the sodium, the protein helps to begin the protein synthesis process, then take your shower, and then on your meal, that's when you have, try to shoot for 30 to 40 grams of protein per meal. Everyone's different. Some people have like 2 meals or 3 meals or 4. We don't know, but I always try to, because there's a point in protein, and protein, I don't like to, this is where I kind of laugh at all the fad diets. I don't like to like glorify a certain macronutrient. They're all just as important in our diet. Carbs, protein, fats, they are all equally important. At certain times, though, that's where I think the fad diets could be right in some way. But also, like, we need to glorify carbs for when we train. We need to glorify protein and fats for when we recover. So it's a very common thing to always be misled of, like, oh, well, now that I'm off the bike, I don't need carbs. I'm done. I already overate my carbs. And then overdo the protein. Your body can only synthesize so much protein. So if you're like pounding in 50 grams, 60 grams of protein. Protein also turns into fat, just saying. If there's excess of anything in our body, it'll turn into fat. It'll be stored away, because that's what our bodies are great at doing. And appreciate our bodies for doing that too, because our bodies are pretty incredible for how they manage ourselves in this society today. So protein's important, but not to overdo it or underdo it. Like 10 grams per meal, maybe not. Try to shoot for 30 to 40 grams. That's kind of like the key. Of course, it's all based on weight, kilograms, you know.
Yeah. Charlotte, what is next for you coming up as more of a rider, racer, or even as a coach? What is the next steps for you? I guess let's start there first as a coach. Is there more training you want to go see yourself get, or do you want to expand who you're working with, or what does that look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always open to other coaches. I always like talking to other coaches. I'm actually a USA Cycling Level 1 coach and a Training Peaks coach. I like to be very active in that community because it's important to get programs, because there are a lot of coaches out there that might not have the proper knowledge to aid people. I think, you know, because I'm the new generation, I really think there's a way we can change how coaching is, where it's kind of a blend of psychology, nutrition, and coaching, because it all does go in hand. So, as far as coaching, I just continue to coach my athletes, and whoever wants me as a coach, I'm happy to bring on. I think a lot of my future now is doing a lot of talks to junior athletes about nutrition and being more hands-on. I know I'll be heading over to the Giant headquarters in LA, doing a nutrition talk there, and broadening my knowledge on ultra nutrition, because that's what I'm getting into, thanks to my husband. He's the ultra, he's like bringing me to the dark side, which is completely different nutrition, where I've actually used fasted rides to fuel depleted, but then, you know, it's kind of almost opposite what I've always known. So it's really hard, but I'm really trying to understand it to best gauge how is it best, because you can't fuel for 50 hours straight on gels. I mean, you could try. I just don't see it working for the general population or myself. So that's a lot of, like, I think the next things, a lot of is the experience. The training for ultras is very different. I've incorporated so much more strength. I'm actually, my husband and I are like Pilates people now. We have all our little tools and stuff in the living room, and we've been doing a ton more strength, because the first ultra I did, which was across Andes in Chile, I got a knee injury. And so I've learned that you need ultimate strength to really prevent injury, to do these long, long rides. So yeah, that's what's coming up, and pretty much all mountain biking, which I, again, thought I would never say, but I'm really enjoying the trails, really enjoying the challenge of technical skills. Because I think a lot of my life I've been all about fitness, which is great, but technical skills are super helpful. And it's really fun to be kind of, again, at ground zero, learning all over again.
Yeah. When you say mountain biking, are we talking XC? Are you talking ultra endurance stuff? What kind of events are you aimed at with that kind of stuff?
More ultra. Okay. Probably not XC, especially not short track. My upper end is probably pretty dusty. But it's more of like 6 hour races, point to point, just like a 9 hour race, 25 hours of Rock Hollow, just more of the ultra marathon mountain biking.
Gotcha. Where can people find you on social if they want to follow along with your story or get a hold of you, Charlotte?
Yeah, they can just find me on Instagram, Charlotte Backus. You'll see me. It's usually a bunch of bike pictures. And yeah, you can email me. My website is exquisiteendurancecoaching.com. That's where I have all my blogs. There's tons of information. I do Zwift sessions every Friday, where it's free to everybody. It's called Friday Smash. It's a route-based workout. We're all tethered together, so it's for anybody of any level, and that's where I kind of geek out. Every week I have a topic. It could be nutrition, hydration, whatever. And we go through a whole series where there's also a workout, but during the workout, I'm geeking out on all this knowledge because I love being able to do that. I think knowledge is power. And so I also post blogs and everything. And yeah, always feel free to reach out to me. I'm open to anybody. And yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. This has been amazing, Charlotte. And sometime I want to actually have you back on and take a deep dive on your life as a Zwift racer, because I think that cracks a lot of our brains. So
believe it or not, I was actually one of the beta riders. They came to me and were like, hey, we're opening this thing called Zwift. You want to try?
I had heard you mention that on the other podcast, and I was like, I don't think we're gonna have time to fit that in. That's like a whole conversation on its own, but it sounds amazing. And Charlotte, thank you so much for coming on the show today and just for giving us some of your wisdom and insights on the nutrition world and how it kind of plays with the body and mind relationship. And this has been awesome.
Of course. Thank you.
Charlotte Backus Turner, everyone. Thanks for listening today. If you're looking for more content, head over to the Stable Cyclist YouTube channel, where I just released an episode about mental performance and mental health and kind of the gap that is between the two that can be bridged. And if you're wondering what video it is, well, you can just look for the thumbnail where I have some Harry Potter and Voldemort vibes going on in the thumbnail. You can also find me on Instagram at The Stable Cyclist. The Stable Cyclist podcast is a twice monthly show that focuses on bikes, mentality, and mental health. Episodes will drop always on the first and third Friday of each month, but as has been the case the past 2 weeks, we'll also have some bonus pods when possible. Have an amazing day. Thank you for listening and sharing the podcast. And most importantly, remember, you are loved.